Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're going deep diving into how childhood experiences, those early years, can actually have a long-term impact on mental health here in the UK.
Yeah, it's really fascinating stuff.
It is. And we've got some great material to dig into, excerpts from a research study called, get this, Childhood Experiences, Shaping Adult Mental Health in the UK. We even have some visuals to go along with it.
Oh, nice. Visuals always help bring things to life.
Right. So get ready for some surprising stats and some, well, maybe some uncomfortable truths too. But hey, that's what deep dives are all about, getting past those surface level chats and really understanding the complexities.
Absolutely. And this topic, it's relevant to everyone, honestly. Whether you're interested in mental health personally or maybe professionally, understanding those early experiences, well, it's kind of a game changer.
So true. Okay, so let's start with the basics. We're talking about adverse childhood experiences, ACEs for short. Now, you might be thinking, oh, isn't this just about, like, bad parenting?
Yeah, I can see how someone might jump to that conclusion.
But it's actually way more complicated than that. It's not just about individual families. It's about, well, kind of like societal factors, too.
It's kind of like this complex web of influences, right? Individual experiences woven into, like, the larger social fabric.
Exactly. And the research actually shows that ACEs, they're much more common than people think. Get this, 1 in 3 adults in the UK has experienced at least one ACE.
Wow, 1 in 3. That's a lot higher than I would have guessed.
Right, it's kind of mind-blowing. So let's break down what we actually mean by ACEs. The research lists things like physical abuse, emotional abuse, you know, the heavy stuff.
Right, things that unfortunately, a lot of people have experienced.
Yeah. And then there's exposure to things like domestic violence or even growing up in a household where there's substance misuse.
It's not just about isolated incidents, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
ACEs are more like a pattern, a recurring thing.
Yeah.
And that can really affect a child's development, how they see the world.
It's like living in a constant state of stress, almost like you're always on edge.
Exactly. And that kind of stress, it can disrupt a child's emotional development, you know, make it harder for them to form like secure bonds with others.
And we know that those early bonds, those relationships, they're so crucial for healthy development.
Oh, absolutely. They shape everything from our self-esteem to our ability to trust and connect with others later in life.
So I guess the big question is, what happens when a child grows up in that kind of environment? What are the long-term effects?
Well, the research points to a strong link between ACEs and, you know, negative mental health outcomes. We're talking things like depression, anxiety, and even more severe conditions.
It's not surprising when you think about it. That kind of early trauma, it has to leave a mark.
Yeah, it's like those experiences get kind of embedded in our nervous systems, shaping how we respond to stress and challenges throughout our lives.
So it's not just about how we feel, it's about how our brains are actually wired.
Exactly. The research goes into this fascinating detail about how, get this, toxic stress from ACEs can actually reshape the neural pathways in the brain. Literally, it's rewiring the brain.
Okay, that's where I need you to break it down for me. How does this rewiring actually happen? What's going on at a biological level?
So picture your brain as this incredibly complex network, right? With all these connections firing away, sending signals.
Okay, got it. Lots of connections, sending messages all over the place.
Right. Now imagine that toxic stress, that constant state of fight or flight. It's like it floods the brain with these stress hormones like cortisol.
Cortisol, yeah, that's the stress hormone, right? The one that gets us all amped up.
Exactly. But when there's too much of it for too long, especially during childhood when the brain is super adaptable, well, it can start to damage those connections, those pathways.
It's like those pathways get overloaded, maybe even short-circuited.
Kind of, yeah. It's like driving on a dirt road during a rainstorm. Eventually, those ruts get so deep, it's hard to even navigate.
And we're talking about crucial areas of the brain, right? Like the ones responsible for memory, decision-making, all that good stuff.
Exactly. Yep. Areas like the hippocampus, that's vital for memory formation. And the prefrontal cortex, that's the CEO of our brain, helping us make decisions, regulate emotions, you know, all the things that keep us functioning well.
So when those areas are affected by toxic stress, it's like the brain's control center is struggling to do its job.
Exactly. And that can manifest in so many different ways, from difficulty concentrating in school to struggling to manage emotions, even forming healthy relationships.
It's kind of like a domino effect, right? Those early experiences, they set off this chain reaction that can impact every aspect of a person's life.
It's powerful stuff, and it really highlights how crucial it is to create supportive environments for kids, especially in those early years when their brains are most adaptable, most vulnerable.
But the research doesn't just focus on the UK, right? I noticed it mentioned a comparison with Honduras. Why make that connection?
Yeah, that's a really important point. It shows that even though the specifics might differ, the impact of ACs on mental health, it's surprisingly consistent across cultures.
So even though the types of adversity might vary, the effects on the brain and development are similar?
Right. Like in Honduras, poverty and exposure to violence are much more prevalent, while in the UK, it's more about things like household dysfunction and neglect. But the long-term effects on mental well-being, sadly, they're pretty similar.
That's kind of unsettling, isn't it? It's like, no matter where you are in the world, these early experiences can leave a lasting impact.
It's a reminder that while we need tailored interventions for different communities, the core principles for addressing ACEs, those can be applied globally.
So it's about recognizing both the universal and the specific aspects of this challenge. Okay, that makes sense.
It does. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, this research isn't just about doom and gloom.
Right. We're not just here to wallow in the problem. We want solutions. We want to know what we can do about it.
Exactly. And that's where things start to get, well, a bit more hopeful, you know.
Okay, I'm ready for some hope. Where do we even begin to tackle something as complex as ACEs?
Well, there are a lot of angles, you know, to consider. We can start by thinking about prevention, right? Like, how do we create those supportive environments where kids can, like, thrive?
So we're talking about things like stable housing, making sure kids have access to, you know, good childcare, maybe even things like parenting classes or support groups.
Exactly. When parents, you know, feel supported and they're equipped to handle all the challenges that come with raising kids, well, they can provide that sense of safety and security that can really buffer those negative effects of ACEs.
Yeah.
And remember, it's not just parents, right? It's that extended family, teachers, even people in the community. They all play a role in creating that web of support for kids.
That makes me think about schools. They're like right there on the front lines, seeing these kids every day and noticing, you know, maybe some changes in behavior, how they're doing in class.
Absolutely. Schools are in a unique position to identify those kids who might be struggling and then, you know, connect them to resources. Imagine if every school had a dedicated mental health professional, someone trained to recognize the signs of trauma and provide early intervention services.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? It'd be like a safety net for those kids who might, you know, otherwise slip through the cracks.
Exactly. And early intervention, that's key. The sooner we can address these issues, the better the outcomes for those kids.
But it's not just about professional help, right? The research, it talks a lot about parental warmth and involvement. Like, that's a protective factor against ACEs.
Oh, that's so important. You know, even when there's adversity, when there's those challenges, a loving and supportive parent-child relationship can make all the difference. It's about creating that sense of safety, belonging, and unconditional love, you know?
So what does that look like in practice? What can parents actually do to foster that kind of connection, especially if they're, you know, dealing with their own stress or maybe even their own trauma?
The research suggests some really simple but powerful strategies, you know, like prioritizing quality time with your kids, really listening to their concerns and validating their emotions.
Making them feel heard, making them feel understood.
Exactly. And it's also about creating a predictable and consistent home environment, you know, clear routines, boundaries, all that good stuff.
It's about providing that sense of stability, right? That feeling of security that allows kids to feel safe enough to explore and develop that emotional resilience.
You got it. And remember, building resilience, it's not about shielding kids from adversity. It's about giving them the skills and those coping mechanisms they need to navigate life's challenges, which, let's face it, there are going to be challenges.
So it's about teaching them how to manage their stress, regulate their emotions, build healthy relationships, all of that.
Exactly. And these skills, they can be taught and nurtured, you know, from a young age. Think about things like mindfulness exercises, relaxation techniques, even just encouraging kids to do activities they enjoy, things that bring them joy.
It sounds like we need this multifaceted approach, right? Tackling this from every angle, supporting parents and empowering schools, making sure everyone has access to mental health services, and then, you know, fostering that resilience in kids.
I totally agree. It's a complex challenge, but it requires a really comprehensive and collaborative solution. But the research shows us that even small interventions, they can have a ripple effect, creating positive change for individuals, families, and entire communities.
This reminds me of that comparison the research made between the UK and Honduras. You know, it emphasized that while those specific risk factors might be different, those long-term effects of ACEs on mental health, they're pretty consistent across cultures.
It's a crucial point. Yeah. It highlights that we need both universal and tailored approaches to tackling ACEs,
right.
Recognizing the common threads that bind human experience while also being sensitive to those unique challenges faced by different communities.
Mm. So it's about finding that balance between, you know, broad stroke solutions and then that individualized support. Okay, that makes sense. But I keep thinking about that statistic, that 1 in 3 adults in the UK have experienced at least one ACE. It's just a stark reminder of how widespread this really is.
It really is, and it kind of emphasizes how urgent this is, mm-hmm. You know? Addressing ACEs, it needs to be a public health priority. We can't ignore the long-term costs, both human and economic, of unaddressed childhood trauma.
Speaking of costs, the research did touch on that economic impact of ACEs. It used the example of how financial instability, how that can worsen the impact of ACEs on kids.
That's a great point. The research highlights how economic hardship, it can create this cascade of stressors for families, making it even harder to provide that stable and nurturing environment that kids really need. It's like a vicious cycle. And it really emphasizes the need for policies that address both poverty and childhood adversity. You know, they kind of go hand in hand.
It's like we can't just focus on those individual solutions, right? We have to look at the bigger picture, those systemic factors that contribute to ACEs, like poverty, inequality, lack of access to quality health care and education.
Absolutely. So, it's about creating a society where all children, regardless of their background and circumstances, have the opportunity to reach their full potential.
This has been incredibly enlightening, but I can't help but think about those personal stories behind these statistics. You know, can you share any examples of how ACEs might actually manifest in adulthood?
Of course. Imagine someone who, you know, seems very successful in their career, but they struggle with like intense anxiety and they find it really hard to maintain like meaningful relationships.
Like they have it all, but they're still struggling, you know?
Right. And it could be because they have a history of maybe emotional neglect, or they witness volatile relationships during their childhood.
Yeah.
And that can lead to like deep-seated fears of abandonment and an inability to trust others, even if they're not, you know, consciously aware of those anxieties.
Mm. So even though they seem successful on the surface, they're carrying this unseen burden from their past.
Exactly. Their anxiety might show up as like workaholism, you know, perfectionism, or this constant need for control.
Yeah.
It's those coping mechanisms they develop to manage that emotional insecurity stemming from those early experiences.
It's a good reminder that you can't judge a book by its cover. Everyone has a story, and sometimes those people who seem the most successful, well, they're carrying the heaviest burdens.
It's a really powerful reminder to practice compassion and empathy, recognizing that everyone's fighting their own battles, often rooted in experiences we may never fully understand.
What about other ways those experiences can manifest? Any other examples that highlight the long-term effects of ACEs?
Think about someone who struggles with like chronic depression. They just have difficulty experiencing joy or pleasure in life, you know. And it could be that their childhood was marked by emotional suppression, where expressing their feelings, you know, was met with discouragement or maybe even punishment.
So they learn to bottle it all up.
Basically. And then they carry those emotional suppression mechanisms into adulthood, and it affects how they connect with their own emotions, you know? They might struggle to form those deep and authentic connections with others.
It's like they're numb, almost. Like detached, or maybe constantly burdened by this sense of emptiness.
Yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah.
And it underscores the need for compassion, understanding, and those effective interventions that can help people heal from those wounds of their past.
Speaking of interventions, what does the research say about, you know, the effective ways to address the effects of ACEs? What can we do to help people heal?
There's growing evidence supporting therapeutic approaches like cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, that's EMDR.
I've heard of CBT, but EMDR, that's a new one for me. Can you break that down a little bit?
Sure. EMDR is a relatively new approach that focuses on processing those traumatic memories, but in a way that reduces their emotional intensity. So it involves this structured protocol that kind of guides clients through a series of eye movements, or sometimes other forms of bilateral stimulation, while they recall the traumatic event.
So both CBT and EMDR work with trauma, but in different ways. Are there specific situations where one might be more effective than the other?
CBT is often a good fit for people who want to understand that link between their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. While EMDR can be particularly helpful for those struggling with flashbacks, nightmares, or that intense emotional reactivity, you know?
It's important to remember that everyone is different, and what works for one person might not work for another. It's about finding the right approach, and that's a journey of self-discovery and collaboration with a qualified mental health professional.
You got it. And it's not just about therapy either. Building a supportive network of friends, family, or even online communities that can play a vital role in healing and recovery too.
It sounds like it's a combination of professional help, personal support, and then, you know, self-care too.
Yeah.
All of that is crucial for navigating those challenges posed by ACEs.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that healing is a journey. It's not a destination. Mm-hmm. And it requires a holistic approach that addresses the physical, emotional, and social aspects of well-being.
This has been an incredibly insightful conversation, and I'm sure our listeners are feeling both informed and empowered to take action. But before we wrap things up, I'd love to hear your final thoughts on this topic. What's the most important message you want to leave our listeners with? This has been a really eye-opening deep dive. I know I've learned a lot, but you've guided us through, you know, the science, the impact, and even some solutions. If you had to leave our listeners with just one key takeaway, what would it be?
I think it's this: knowledge is power, you know, especially when we're talking about something as impactful as ACEs. Now that you're aware of how deeply those childhood experiences can shape adult lives, well, you're in a position to do something about it, right?
So it's not enough to just understand the science. We have to, like, actually apply that knowledge in our own lives and in our communities.
Exactly. Think about it this way. You now have a deeper understanding of the challenges that some people face, maybe even people you're close to, you know, and that awareness, it can fuel compassion and make you a more supportive friend, a more supportive family member, a more supportive colleague.
That's a good point. It's easy to get overwhelmed by the statistics, but ultimately this knowledge, it's about empowering us to create positive change, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that change can start small. It
yeah.
could be as simple as, you know, advocating for more mental health resources in your child's school,
yeah.
supporting a local charity that works with families, or even just having open conversations about mental health with your loved ones, you know?
Those are all great examples of how we can translate awareness into action. And speaking of action, the research also highlights the importance of, you know, robust mental health policies at a societal level. What kind of policies are we talking about here, and what's already being done in the UK?
Well, the UK actually already has some fantastic initiatives in place.
Yeah.
Like CMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services.
Right, CMHS.
Yeah. But consistent access to those services, that can be a challenge, you know. And research plays such a vital role in identifying those gaps and pushing for improvement, for making things better.
So we have a framework, but there's always room for improvement. And the source reminds us that research is crucial for ensuring that those policies are truly effective and reaching the people who need them the most.
Exactly. We got to keep learning, keep refining those approaches.
What else can be done on a policy level to address ACEs?
Well, I think investment in early childhood development programs, that's key. You know, think high quality childcare, parenting support programs, and early intervention services for those families that are struggling with challenges. These proactive measures can, you know, help mitigate the impact of ACEs and give more children a strong foundation for a healthy future.
It sounds like a multi-pronged approach is needed, right? We're tackling this from every angle: individual action, community support, and then those strong public policies. It's about recognizing that ECEs are everyone's responsibility, you know?
I couldn't agree more. And while the research, you know, it does paint a stark picture of the challenges, it also offers a message of hope. We now understand the profound impact of those early experiences on brain development, mental health, and that knowledge. It gives us the power to create a better future for ourselves and for those generations to come.
This deep dive has been both informative and inspiring. I know I'll be thinking about these insights long after we finish recording. But before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
If I could leave you with one final thought, it would be this. Never underestimate the power of human connection, you know. A supportive relationship, whether it's with a parent, a teacher, a friend, or a therapist, that can be such a powerful antidote to that toxic stress of ACEs. Reach out to those around you, offer a listening ear, and let's work together to build communities where everyone feels seen, heard, and supported.
That's a beautiful message to end on. This has been a truly insightful exploration of ACEs and their impact on mental health here in the UK. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
It's been a pleasure sharing these insights with you. And remember, knowledge is just the beginning. Let's use what we've learned to create a world where every child has the opportunity to thrive, you know?
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for another deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, keep learning, and let's keep the conversation going.